This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line, ready to go after a hearty 13-game slate of the NFL yesterday. Two more games to wrap up week two in the NFL preseason. I'm Ben Wilson from our Circus Sportsbook studios downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi is with me as well. Michael, I know you were fast on that couch watching football from sunup to sundown yesterday. People were clamoring for, let's get some preseason red zone going here. It was a great day of football. Some of the quarterback play left a little to be desired, but still a lot to talk about today. Excited to be back with you, sir.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here with you too, Ben. Thank you for coming in on Sunday. I think we've had a Saturday yesterday. You know, the Bears' first team offense could not move the football against the Bengals' second team offense. That has to be concerning. And so all this, you know, we got to wait and see all that. I think that's important to be patient with a quarterback like Caleb Williams. But the concerning part is when you watch Pittsburgh and you watch Russell Wilson and you watch their offense, how bad they looked in terms of protection, in terms of just some continuity in the game, you got to be alarming. And then, of course, the Raider game against the Cowboys. And we know the Cowboys don't have all their pieces in place, but, you know, the Raiders really struggled to throw the football like they did last year. So I think what we learned after Saturday's games is when you think you have two quarterbacks, as the great John Madden said, you don't have any quarterbacks. And I think we saw that in Pittsburgh, and we saw that out in Las Vegas. Now, we can pretend, you know, we can also extend that to Daniel Jones, one of your personal favorites, Ben, you know, and see how he played, you know. I mean, so you can make excuses, but when veteran quarterbacks don't play well in preseason, you're worried. I can tell you, you're worried about that.
You know, it's been great, though, is for bettors taking unders blindly from our own Dave Tooley after last night. 24-6 now to the unders based on closing lines. 80%.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's always the case, too. And you just say, like, how, and they keep lowering the number, and we keep going under. It's kind of a sad commentary on how football, we're not practicing enough football. That's pretty clear. Like I'm not saying the Bears' offense isn't going to be good. They can be, but I don't think they've had enough practice time to be good. Because with a second-team defense like the Bengals put out there yesterday can really slow you down. You can't run block a lick. Now, you could say, well, we didn't have Swift in the game. You can make 1,000 excuses in preseason. Here's what I do know about preseason. When something smells in preseason, it smells in September.
You made the great point even going back to last summer. You could tell with Frank Reich in Carolina. Something didn't smell right from week one in preseason there. And it was absolutely reflected, manifested into the regular season. I did want to start with that Chicago-Cincinnati game, though, because if you were just kind of looking at Twitter highlights and you weren't able to deep dive, there were so many games yesterday. I think the general consensus, Michael, coming out of that game was, oh my goodness, Caleb Williams made a couple unbelievable plays. This guy is ready. He is going to be a stud as a rookie because he saw, you know, the amazing job to extend plays with the legs. He makes a great play throwing the ball about 30 yards down the field. Then on the, you know, improvisation, gets out of a potential would-be sack, scrambles left, rolls out, dives into the end zone for a 7-yard touchdown. Those were the highlights, but what I'm sure a lot of people didn't see, Michael, was what you kind of alluded to. The other struggles here in a guy that goes 6-13 against a, you know, backup defense, and it kind of speaks to what is likely to be the case this year in Chicago, where you're going to see a lot of, you know, extremely high wire, impressive plays out of pocket where Caleb Williams makes something out of nothing. But at the same time, that is not a general optimal solution when you're talking about a young quarterback who was very turnover prone in college, who has not done it before and has not seen high level defenses yet. So to me, certainly a harbinger of things to come for Chicago. Like, we're going to see the brilliance this year at times, but on the whole, consistency, play to play, Michael, I still have my doubts there on the Bears.
Well, look, I mean, you know, go through the drive chart, see who the Bengals had on the field. They didn't have their guys. So first drive of the game, they come out. Of course, naturally, they have no idea they play in Chicago, right? They could care less that they play in Chicago, even though it's going to be rainy, cold, windy by the middle of October in some of those games. They come out and trying to fire the ball all over the place, 3 and out, boom, 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 3 and out. Don't gain a yard on that drive. They get penalized in there. They come back out go another 3 and out, but they gained 8 yards, so that's encouraging. Then they come back out again, Ben, and they go 3 and out, but they gained 8 more. So they're doing really well. We've got 16 yards in the first quarter gaining. And then in the second quarter, they go 5 plays. Well, that's great. We got at least a first down. and we kick a field goal because we gained 17 yards, but we got a 38-yard penalty on a pass interference call. That's why we got 3 points. And then, again, this is all Bengals backups. Right. And then they go 8 plays, 90 yards for a touchdown, get 4 first downs. If you're an executive and you're the Chicago – if I'm Ryan Poles and I'm watching that tape, I'm saying, look, we're not good enough up front to block the backups of the Bengals. How the hell are we going to block the starters of the Lions? How are we going to block the starter? How are we going to block Kenny Clark in here? How the hell are we going to block Aleem McNeil? You know, if we can't block these guys, we're going to have a tough time running the football. And let me say this really clearly for all Bear fans. If you can't run the ball, Caleb Williams is not going to win games for you throwing 45 times. It just ain't going to happen. I know he's a good player. He's the best quarterback Bear fans have had. I told you Mitchell Trubisky was no good. I told you Justin Fields was no good. I'm telling you, Caleb Williams can be a good player, but you're going to have to redesign the offense so you have some more physicality, or else there's going to be a lot of turnovers, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears had 3 losses last year with a fourth quarter win probability of over 80%. What does that tell you? Couldn't protect leads, could not effectively use their offensive line to run the football, stay ahead of the chains. And as much as there's optimism about the reshuffling there, and, you know, a lot of publications have the Bears kind of penciled in here, top 15 O-line for sure coming into the year, that is still something that is, as long as you know, that is a big fear factor for a team like Chicago, who has a rookie quarterback. You know, I know the data and the history says, you know, quarterbacks who come into situations like this are actually, you know, with a 6.5 win total or higher, rookie quarterbacks last 15 years, those teams have gone 4-2 to the over with 3 playoff teams. Yet, offensive line usually has been much better. Like, you think about when Mark Sanchez came into the Jets, he had a rock solid line in front of him, helped him have a lot of success in that 09 season. That's still where I'm a little bit hesitant here to fully get behind Chicago, as much as there's a lot of positivity, you know, up and down that roster. The big holes, though, are in the parts that matter a lot for young guys, and that's O-line especially.
Right. And I think what we have to do as a betting network and betting analyst is take a look at these preseason games and not just look like the fans look at the game books and the highlight plays that the worldwide leader is going to show your NFL network, because there's more to it. Let's take the Giants game, for example, right? The Giants have their starters in the game, pretty much all their starters in the game, whereas the Houston Texans put their starting unit out there with the offense. Right. They had other than Laramie Tunsil, they had pretty much all their starters in the offensive line, and they had C.J. Stroud. They went right down the field on the Giants, right down the field on them. Meanwhile, the Giants, you know, they couldn't move the football. And then Daniel Jones does things that, you know, you would expect a first year player to do. Not a guy making $40 million that we've spent all offseason building our team around, you know. So they're now I'm worried. I thought Houston looked very good. I think that airplane ride back from Houston to New York was a little bit unsettling for the Giants. What are we going to do with quarterback? Are we good enough on defense to really win? You know, and so I think you have to kind of take a look at it. What happened a couple of years ago, Ben? San Francisco went down to Houston. Houston whooped the butt, right? Trey Lance was horrible. Kyle Shanahan on that plane ride home said, that's enough. Jimmy Garoppolo, you're no longer on that field. You're on this field. I think this week is what reality sets in. It's set in. I think clearly it's going to have to set in for a team like the Giants, and it's got to set in for a team like the Raiders. I think Mike Tomlin, who I have tremendous respect for, but you can't watch Russell Wilson play and feel like he's the same. He looks like an old boxer that was once great that doesn't have greatness anymore.
Yep. In that Giant-Texans game, Michael, we were on the air with Mike Palm yesterday morning watching everybody in the world flocked to the over in that game with the news that Daniel Jones would be in. A lot of money in on the Giants. Went from 5.5 to 3-point dogs. Total gets moved all the way out to 40.5. And we're thinking, what? Why? Because Daniel Jones is making his first appearance back off an ACL without Malik Nabers in, who had the sprained ankle earlier in the week, wide receiver, and really no other skilled position players you would feel confident in. Well, I guess we know why the total went up, Michael, because Daniel Jones just, you know, gift-wrapped the Texans 6 points on a pick six. So that was obviously why. We should have seen that coming the whole way. And yeah, you are right. I mean, I feel like I'm sure there are Giants fans out there going, well, you guys have been just beating the dead horse here, you know, all offseason. But you have to at least give us something to have any sort of modicum of positivity about. Giants can't do it, Michael. And it's a team that I've been in on as the worst team in the NFL. You can still get them out there 10-11-1 in the market. And it's just a team that I keep waiting for something. Positionally, every single part of the roster doesn't look like there's anything to get excited about. And even the defense, which was good last year, you think about, you know, in some parts, they had the widest gap in the NFL of, you know, turnovers versus actual defensive EPA. Like, they basically just feasted off turnovers, which are not sustainable year to year. And it's why I still don't have much confidence even in the defensive side of the ball, keeping them in games this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, Neighbors was great. He went out there.
Yeah.
What do you have? You know, he played, which the book was wrong on. They didn't think he was going to play, but he went out there and played. He had four catches for 54 yards. The first drive, he had a chance to make a play. Kind of went through his hands. Stingley, first play of the game, Ben, Stingley drops an interception. I mean, that's not even something they're going to talk about. Everybody's going to watch the bad Daniel Jones play. First play of the game, they come out and Daniel throws it right between the two and the four of Stingley, and he drops it. So there's a concern there. I think, to me, you've got to readjust your thinking a little bit here, because you get so lured into believing you're practicing against the same people all the time that you're actually better than you are.
Well, yeah, look, and it's the only team in the NFL. Like, top five turnover rate, bottom half defensive EPA from a season to go. So, like, if you have offense that has all these question marks, like, you need something on the other side of the ball to help pick you up. And as awesome as, you know, Malik Nabers has been when he's been healthy, Michael, yeah, it's clearly not there right now. And I will be curious to see where you have, you know, like, Minnesota had the injury earlier in the week with the backup quarterback coming into the year, J.J. McCarthy. He was never going to play anyway week one. Where that line goes, Michael, to start the season. Because it's a Vikings team that I think is a lot better than people give them credit for.
Yeah.
They go to New York. They're about a point favorite. You're going to have to hold me back. That's going to be a day of Vikings play all day as we start the season. We're just getting the show started. We'll talk about more takeaways from preseason week two from last night. There's a lot to get to. What to make of the Raiders quarterback battle. Antonio Pierce says he's sleeping on it, Michael. What does that mean? We'll discuss it next here on the Lombardi Line. Back on the Lombardi Line here from downtown Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson. He's Michael Lombardi. How awesome is it, Michael, that at this time next week, I believe you'll be with Stormy, but at this time next week, you guys will be breaking down what just happened in week zero of college football, which is pretty awesome. I mean, the fact that we're 6 days away. So, I'm excited. I know you are as well.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, look, we're going to get on a routine. I think that's the best part. And, you know, when you get into that routine, it's just the weeks go and we get to talk about football constantly. It's really good. And you know, 10 days from now, we have the Battle of the Beaches here in Ocean City, New Jersey, where Bergen Catholic comes in and plays IMG. So we have it at all different elements. We have high school, college, and pro coming up soon.
Next Sunday might be the most airtime. The Delaware State Hornets or the Nevada Wolfpack or New Mexico Lobos get on VSiN, at least for some time. Anyway, Tim Murray knows a thing or two about all those teams. He's the host of our VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We go out to our progressive guest line right now. You also see Tim Monday through Fridays on VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern. And Tim, I've gotten a lot of great insight here from the College Football Betting Pod. It's been a really nice resource for all of us, I think, to get prepared for the offseason. I think a lot of bettors now, they're starting to look at these odds and they're going, whoa, I mean, SMU Nevada's moved like almost a touchdown for next week. It's 27. Money's coming in on Georgia Tech. What do you make? Just to kind of get bettors caught up to speed here, as this is really now the time where we're getting, a lot of the casual bettors are starting to do their deep dive onto what to expect for week zero. For those two FBS versus FBS games next week, what do you make of where there has been a lot of betting interest coming in, one on a favorite, one on an underdog?
Well, first, I need to know the betting line. That's a big big spot for the New Jersey boys to bring in IMG. So I'll ask Michael offline about how we make money off some of that battle. But we'll start with the biggest one, where College Game Day will be in 6 days, Aviva Stadium. And they played in this stadium just a year ago. Notre Dame played Navy, and I was texting with a couple of folks who covered that game just to see, hey, you know, how was the field conditions? Is this going to be a concern? And, you know, from everything that they said, the field conditions shouldn't be a worry there over at Aviva Stadium. So that's good, as they were prepared for that game a year ago when Notre Dame played Navy. As for how this game has been lined, Ben, you know, it's funny because this was probably a game at 14 that I might have been looking to take the dog here a little bit in Georgia Tech. This team has a really challenging schedule for the entire year, and we've actually seen some money coming on their under win total. I believe it opened around 5.5. It's now down to 5. But their schedule is just so daunting. But I do think as the year goes on, guys, this could be a team that could challenge some of the big boys that are on their schedule. But I think I agree with the move, and I wonder maybe have we gone a little bit too far with this one. So that's where I would initially kind of feel. You know, Florida State, obviously a lot of changeover with DJ Uiagalelei coming in as their starting quarterback. Obviously, he has experience in the ACC, spending the majority of his career at Clemson. Then he went to Oregon State last year. I think some people certainly were surprised to see that that's who they ended up going with as their starting quarterback via the portal early on in the offseason to replace Jordan Travis. But look, Mike Norvell's done a phenomenal job over his time there at Florida State, building through it within the portal. So Florida State, one of the more interesting teams, I would say, in the ACC, and it does really feel like it's a three-headed monster to ultimately grab that automatic bid out of the ACC, whether it be Miami, Clemson, or Florida State. As for the late-night game, a couple hours north of where we sit, Ben, man, this is, Jeff Choate coming into Nevada from Texas. It's going to be a full-on rebuild here for the Wolfpack. And SMU is a team that, you know, I know Stormy in our VSIN college football guide wrote up there over. I have a little bit of exposure to over 7.5 wins onto SMU. This is a team that very portal heavy, and did a good job and building through the portal. Preston Stone coming off of an injury from a year ago. This is a guy that I think is absolutely a P4 type of quarterback, and that's what SMU is now. So I would actually, if forced to play it, I would probably still look to lay it with SMU. I think this is a team that might be looking to make a statement, and I think they'll be ready to rock and roll up there in Reno, where we just don't know what to expect from Nevada in year one of the Jeff Choate era.
Hey, Tim, let's skip ahead to the next week, week one, I guess. And interesting matchup. North Carolina goes to Minnesota, and the line's been right around Minnesota favored by 2.5. You know, to me, North Carolina should be a better program than they are. We know, obviously, they get quarterbacks drafted, Sam Howell, Drake May. But what's your take on this game, and where is Mac Brown's program as it relates to all these other schools?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big year, in my opinion, Michael, for North Carolina, with them, you know, replacing a defensive coordinator. They're 2 years removed of replacing Phil Longo as their offensive coordinator. It's the first time in quite some time that they don't have a surefire, NFL quarterback, you know, taking snaps, right? Sam Howell followed by Drake May. So, you know, this is a game where Minnesota's not a team that I'm necessarily all that high on heading into this year. PJ Fleck, another year there for the Golden Gophers. So, they just lost their defensive coordinator to go to Michigan State. Minnesota did. So, this is, you know, a game that will have a lot of eyeballs certainly on that Thursday, Michael. So, I'll acquiesce a little bit here to Adam Burke, who is very bullish on UNC this year and thinks they could be a bit of a dark horse team. Not a game that I've personally bet, but I think this one we could learn a lot from of what these two teams could potentially be with some coaching changeover from this offseason to now. But yeah, at this point, I probably would look maybe a little bit towards the dog, especially if we get up to 3 and it looks like we're trending that way at some shops, 2.5, juice 15 at some spots. So yeah, this could be a spot where I think you might see that number grab at 3 if we ultimately get there. Certainly an interesting one of teams that I think will, be kind of in that middle of the pack in both of their respective conferences.
He's Tim Murray. Give him a follow at One Tim Murray with us right now here on the Lombardi Line from our Progressive guest side. A classic case study. We see it every year, Tim, a conference like the ACC, which the games we've been previewing involve 4 ACC teams. A lot of reasons to get excited about so many teams at the top. Florida State 1, Clemson 2 in a lot of the power ratings, Miami getting tons of hype. Like, I'm in on NC State. I have some over 8.5 in my account there. Yeah, Stormy's made the case for SMU over. Adam Burke likes UNC. You know, one of these teams in the top 7 or 8 of the power ratings is going to be a massive disappointment. Who would be your best take on who is going to disappoint as far as that upper echelon of the ACC this year?
I don't know if it's a massive disappointment, but I would lean under on Florida State. I mean, it's a lot to bring back. Their win total sits at 9.5. And, you look at the schedule, they have the two big boys in Miami and Clemson. Now they get to host Clemson, but they also have to go to Notre Dame in a pretty tricky situational spot. Notre Dame, a preseason top 10 team. And, you know, for Notre Dame on November 9th, they're coming off a bye, and Florida State will be playing their fourth game in as many weeks. They'll be traveling to South Bend. And then you got to wrap up the season, you know, granted at home, but a challenging spot there. So from a win total perspective of those three, I think Florida State would be that, quote, disappointing team, you know, because you're right, man. I mean, the ACC, it feels like everywhere I turn, whether it be, you know, you looking at NC State and, you know, is Grayson McCall going to be the proper quarterback for Robert and I's offense? Because last year was an absolute disaster with Brendan Armstrong coming in and reuniting with his former OC, or whether it's Virginia Tech bringing back all the production that they've had from a year ago, or SMU from a scheduling standpoint where they don't play a lot of the big boys and they go over their win total. I think at the end of the day, guys, I do think it is a tiered conference where the three best teams are, you know, Clemson, Miami, and Florida State. And I think, you know, for me, if I had to pick one of those three to, quote, disappoint, I would look a little bit towards Florida State with a lot to come back. And you could be looking more at a 9-win season as opposed to obviously what they did last year, which was run the table and go undefeated. And then unfortunately for them, due to the Jordan Travis injury, get left out of the playoff.
How about Clemson? Talk to me about Clemson. I mean, Dabo has been very reluctant to get into the NIL and the transfer portal. What's his team going to look like, and is this going to work out? For me, the schedule is pretty good for them. It should be good. How good are they, though?
Well, we'll find out week one, right, Michael? I mean, you get to play Big Bad Georgia, and that's going to be quite the challenge. And I don't know if that's going to be a fair measuring stick, because I don't think this team is where they used to be, which was rivaling teams like Georgia for the national championship and beating a team like Alabama. But, you know, I picked Clemson, and it wasn't a bet, but I ultimately picked Clemson to win the ACC in our guide when we made all our selections. I think this team is maybe getting slept on a little bit. They still have been recruiting at an elite level. Obviously, if they were plugging holes, it would be much better for them via the portal like a team like Georgia is doing. But, yeah, you look at the schedule, they have to go to Florida State. They avoid Miami. They do have to go to Virginia Tech. I think ultimately, I don't know if they win the conference, guys, but I think Clemson, in year two of Garrett Riley as their offensive coordinator, and maybe Cade Klubnik, former five-star recruit, finally clicks there. I love Phil Maffa, their running back. I think they're playing for the ACC championship in early December.
Great stuff. For more college football, check out all Tim's contributions in our guide, VSiN.
Thanks,
College
Tim.
Football Betting
great
Pod. VSiN Pro subscriber for $175. You can get that through the Super Bowl. Always great to catch up with Tim Murray here from VSiN Primetime. Thanks so much, Tim. Good to see you, man.
See you guys.
As we'll continue the ACC discussion next, Michael, there's a team I'm betting on, a team I'm also looking to fade in the game of the year markets within the ACC. We'll discuss that next here on the Lombardi Line. We continue to roll on here on the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson. What a treat, Michael. We're about to have our guy Von Dalzell. He's in studio with me. I said he woke up early, but I mean, you know this, Michael. You're on East Coast time. It's almost noon there. So I mean, yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about, really, honestly. Hey, Von, what's up, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me. Yeah, Vegas has been good so far. I got an Airbnb last night, and it was nothing like I expected.
Oh yeah.
So I was up till 3 a.m. West Coast, or this time, so 6 a.m. East Coast. So
you look fresh,
yeah,
man.
Still made it. Thank you. Yeah, feel good. Feel good.
I mean, Michael, you talk all the time, Michael. You're like, you know, you come out here for like Super Bowl week, and you're all of a sudden you're doing Lombardi Line. You're like, whoa, I got to be up at like 5 a.m. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is a little different story when you do it out there. But look, it's all good. It's good to have you. We appreciate it, Vaughn.
Yeah, no doubt. Vaughn, this is great work. NBC Sports betting content. And now you get the Big Ten package on NBC. Yeah. So, which, you know, started in earnest some games last year, but we'll get a lot of Big Ten action. I want to break down some of the Big Ten college football teams this year with you, Vaughn. Follow him at B-Money Sports, by the way. One team that has been talked about a ton about the fall off potentially this year, it's Michigan, and where, you know, where to go with the Wolverines. I'll start there and then kind of go up with some of these teams. There's a bunch of, you know, big-name programs at the top of the conference, Vaughn. But what do you make of, you know, a Michigan team that's seen the win total take some under money in the market? A lot of 9.5s at open. We're down to 9s for the most part. What do you expect here? You know, year one for Sharon Moore with massive shoes to fill in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I was the go blue, the big blue guy all last year, but not this year. And I had a feeling you were going to go here with the first play, but I think the under 9.5 is a good bet. That's what I already played. I think 9 is a good bet. When you look at their schedule, which you see on the screen, it's rigorous. The first five games, yes, they're at home. That definitely helps them out in a lot of ways. But that road schedule is nothing that I like for them. Washington, Illinois back-to-back is going to be tough going across the country for that game. Then you get your rival Michigan State. Then Oregon, possibly the biggest game before you have Ohio State there at the end with two games that you should win. But by all accounts, Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State, one of those three games would have to be wins, and Michigan could not slip up the rest of the season. Honestly, we made tons of money on them last year, taking their opponent's team total unders, but this is a totally different team compared to last year. And all the skepticism of cheating scandals, I'm sure that'll come to play this year too. So it's an underplay for me.
Let's talk about another Big Ten team that I'm fascinated with Dominic Raiola, the quarterback, Nebraska. What do you think of their win total, and how serious can they be a player in the Big Ten this year?
Yeah, Nebraska's a team that should only get better. I mean, since Matt Rhule came in, they've been one of the teams that we like to watch consistently, and we like to also make fun of because they have those mind-boggling moments. But as a team, they've consistently been getting better, especially defense, getting some playmakers. And that quarterback position, as you said, is definitely something that I'm interested in seeing how it pans out. But we look at this win schedule, or this schedule and win total of 7.5. There's some tough games. I mean, going to USC, Iowa, Ohio State, those are all games that I have to probably mark up as losses. I'm real big on the Hawkeyes this year. But the beginning of that schedule, I mean, there's potential for this team to go 5-1, 5-0 to start. The Colorado game's a big one. So I would take the over. I wouldn't feel great about it because it is Nebraska still, but I would take the over.
Hey, Mini Mahomes, the quarterback. I mean,
yeah. Oh, man, that's what we're doing now.
Michael loves Raiola. He dressed it up exactly like Mahomes.
Oh, I mean, no.
Like, what could possibly go wrong there? Nebraska's 7.5.
I agree with everything Vaughn said. I mean, they have to prove they're better on defense. I'm not sure SC, and maybe I'll follow up with a question, is I think SC is more paper than they are Tiger. I think Lincoln Riley is really more on a, like, can you show up here and show us you're a great coach? We gave you an $18 million home on the hill looking over the Pacific Ocean. I think there's more pressure in SC than most people suspect.
Yeah, I think USC doesn't have a beautiful schedule either. But when you look at their defense, I don't think their defense will be much better. Like when they play LSU week one, LSU team total, I don't care what it is, I'm going over. Hoping it's a 34.5 or 35.5, but five touchdowns on the USC defense is something LSU's offense should likely do here. And when I look at USC, I mean, they get the transfer running backs, the transfer receivers. They get better in those areas, but they will be traveling across the country for conference games. That's not easy. You got at Michigan, back home against Wisconsin, at Minnesota, back home against Penn State, at Maryland, and it just keeps going. This is a terrible schedule for USC, so yeah, under 7 is absolutely a play. If you're getting plus money like you are here, absolutely play that.
I'm thinking, Vaughn, just doing the math here, because LSU, they come out to LSU-USC Allegiant Stadium Sunday of Labor Day, September 1st. That's LSU -6 pretty much painted, 63.5 your total, which means you're likely going to see 34.5 team total.
That's
LSU, you'd want, yeah,
yeah,
go over on that? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, five touchdowns. I mean, last year when you looked at USC's defense, I believe it was 10 or 11 games, they allowed 27 points. And what's one more touchdown against LSU, a team that's going to get better, has Neusmeyer quarterback and a lot of talent there from the transfer portal.
Not like LSU's defense much to write home about either. You could easily see a shootout. I mean, in that game, both teams could certainly clear that. Talking Big Ten right now with Von Dalzell. I'm fascinated, too, about not only USC, but these other teams coming in. You know, Michael, I mean, you think about, too, just the transition, right? UCLA has been hammered to the under in the betting market for a multitude of reasons. Wasn't the best press conference of all time at Big Ten Media Days for Deshaun Foster. But it's more, you know, the travel, right? Seeing these teams for the first time. You know, Washington is in complete transition when you lose Kalen DeBoer going to Alabama. You bring in Jed Fish. So you have a total overhaul of the roster. And now you have this newfound schedule. You know, what do you make of a Husky team that was very, very popular, great to bet on the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Now it's sort of anybody's guess. Like, I'm lukewarm. I don't really know what to expect out of the Huskies.
I mean, easiest way to break it down, I guess, is TCU 2.0. I mean, I think we're going to see them in a similar position to them where they kind of fall off. You know, they're still a competitive team in a lot of games, but the travel schedule is going to be far too much for the Huskies. And I think when you look at the schedule, I mean, it breaks down to a situation where it's going to be hard to find 7 wins for Washington this year. And they have a totally different team. We're talking about a quarterback change. We're talking about receivers are gone. We're talking about the best O-line in college football last year is gone. Almost every guy. So, there's not many things to brag home about here, but it's a similar spot where you talk about at Rutgers, home against Michigan, at Iowa, at Indiana, back home against SC, at Penn State. I mean, this is just a terrible schedule for a team that's suffering from so much transition right now. So it's got to be an underplay for me, 100%.
How about Oregon? We didn't talk about Oregon or Ohio State. You know, where do you lean against both? The both those teams universally seem to be the two best teams, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. Where do you lean? They potentially could play three times. Where do you lean if for each one?
I didn't even think about the potential of three games between those two, but let's make it happen. I want to see that. I think Ohio State, though,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it really would be. I mean, it could happen. I doubt it, but Ohio State, to me, should be the best team in the country. I have them over 10.5 wins. I have them to go undefeated. I have them to win the national championship. So I am loaded up on the Buckeyes, transitioning from go blue to go red or go scarlet and gray, whatever they're saying down there. I have to learn the lingo now since I'm an Ohio State guy.
But you're going to clearly help Ryan Day, you know, prevention of the gray hair, because it is quite the stressful year for Ryan Day this year.
I mean, they got their quarterback now, though, Will Howard. He's got a bunch of starts, 28 starts, I believe, underneath his belt. He's a dual threat guy, too. They needed that. They didn't know their quarterback till really week three, week four last year. That was a big problem for the Buckeyes. They were going into training camp not knowing who their guy would be. This year, they know everything. And they got the transporter really well. I love the running back Judkins from Ole Miss. I think he's a sleeper at 100-1 to win the Heisman. Wouldn't go crazy on it. It's more of a sprinkle. But I do think Ohio State's schedule sets up very, very well for them to go 11 wins or go undefeated. And I think they should be the national championship favorite. So Oregon, a great team as well, but I'd put my money on Ohio State over
Vaughn Dalzell in on Ohio State. You can find Vaughn at V-Money Sports, outstanding NBC Sports betting analyst. We've been doing, Michael, our favorite win totals here on the show over the last couple weeks. My favorite win total, Vaughn, in the Big Ten, Illinois under 5.5. That was mine. I got minus 110 juice. That's gotten a little juicier now. Brett Bielema is known as a trench guy, and the offensive line gave up 40 sacks last year.
Yeah.
Defense, all but three games, they allowed 100-plus rushing yards, and I don't know why they decided to bring Luke Altmyer back at quarterback, but this guy's a bottom end, a Big Ten QB, you know, 10 picks and 8 starts, gets benched a season ago. I don't see it for Illinois. I know the schedule's not all that tough, but I'm not a believer in general.
I agree. I was going to say the schedule for them. I mean, if they make it to 6 wins, it might be because of the schedule. But to be honest with you, I don't see it either. The talent pool has dropped off so much for Illinois over the past few years. And, I mean, when Chase Brown left, that was pretty much it for that offense. But the defense, too, has taken a big step back. So I don't see much belief in Brett Bielema's squad. I love this guy 2 years ago. I love this team. But now I'm starting to think the transition with all these new teams coming in makes Illinois one of the bottom
favorites
in the Big Ten.
What about my Rutgers, Scarlet Knights? What do you think? What do you think the chance of them going over their total?
What's their win total? What do you guys got?
6.5. I've seen a slight over juice there. Look, schedule is Charmin soft, but
yeah, that's. I see people taking them at 7-1 odds, 6-1 odds to win 10+ games. You know, I would never do that. But you know, if you're getting 8+ for, you know, plus 150 or 200 wins on certain sports books, I would take a look at that for Rutgers, because I think that defense is going to be right along up there with, you know, the Iowas, the Penn State, Ohio States as one of the best defenses in the Big Ten. But it's the offense that's always the issue for Rutgers. Their special teams got better, but the offensive line and the quarterback position will be two areas I think Rutgers will have to make or break this year. So I wouldn't talk you off the over.
I think it's a good strategy, too. A team like a Rutgers where, you know, if things can click for Cali McManus, who has left a lot to be desired,
yeah.
To say the least, in his time in the Big Ten. But if that clicks, now you're looking at a team that could have a very, very high ceiling. It's a team with the second most returning production in the Big Ten. So I like it.
Yeah,
I like where you're coming from.
All right.
Vaughn Dalzell, kind enough to join us in studio here.
Thanks, Vaughn.
At Circa. Vaughn, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate it.
You guys. Have a great day. Best of luck, everyone.
Does great work for NBC Sports, contributor for us, especially on a lot of our live betting weekend shows as well. Can't thank Vaughn enough for stopping by. When we come back, our final college football win total thoughts, last breakdowns of the NFL preseason. 2 more games here to wrap up the Week 2 slate. We'll talk about it next. Back for the final time here on the Lombardi Line. A big thanks to our guest today, Tim Murray from VSiN Primetime, Vaughn Dalzell, NBC Sports betting analyst, for joining us on the show. And a big thanks of you to watching around the country, Marquee Sports Network in Chicago, Masson in the DMV, as well as Nesson in Boston. Always, you know, I was in Boston Airport a few weeks ago, Michael, and just walking through the airport, and we had VSiN on, watching some weekend Lombardi Line. Always love whenever we're
good.
On. It is very, very nice.
Been great to always been on there. Been there for a while. They've always had us, which is great, so we appreciate it.
You can check us out at VSiN.com, YouTube TV, also on the iHeartRadio app from the radio side. Michael, you'll have a fresh pod with Femi, recording bright and early tomorrow morning for the GM
Shuffle.
Yeah,
I'll talk about that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got two more preseason games tonight here for the rest of NFL Week 2 preseason. There's also all the favorite podcast platforms we've got, whether it's Apple, Spotify, all that great stuff that we have, how you can access us here on VSiN. So the two more preseason games tonight to watch. We're not going to see much on the Packer side. I was joking with you off the air as a Packer fan. I'm just trying to mentally prepare myself to watch 2.5 hours of Sean Clifford. A lot of Sean Clifford tonight. No Jordan Love. That line opened Denver -3.5. It's now up to 7 with no Love. Likely no Packer starters playing here. And it's been pretty ugly so far for Packer backups in the preseason. There's been some talk that it really could be a legit battle between Clifford and Michael Pratt, the Tulane rookie, for that backup job. Issue is Pratt's been banged up a little bit. So I don't know how much you're looking to take away, as much as we are likely to see a good deal of Bo Nix here in that preseason race for the Denver Broncos. But all indications are that Nix far and away is going to be the week one starter.
Well, I think if you're a Packer fan, the first thing you got to look at is your offensive line, right? Jordan Morgan's been hurt. Is he going to play at right guard tonight? If they don't play him, now we get a chance to look at all the backups. And I think that's going to be the key. Can Andre Dillard come in and do anything? Remember, Tennessee signed him. He's a first-round pick out of Philadelphia. Got beat out by a seventh-round pick, Jordan Mulata, and has really never played. When he started for Tennessee last year, it wasn't good enough. Can he be the swing tackle for this team? You know, and so I think that the offensive line configuration for Green Bay is really important, because when you watch them in a game, like when you watch them against Dallas, you watch them against San Francisco, they pass protect well, but can they do the things they need to do on a consistent basis in the run game? I think that's really going to be important. So for me, this is a game about their backup offensive line. And then defensively, you know, look, they've got some talented players in the defensive front, no question. But I think you have to kind of look and see, do they have where their depth's coming from, especially at linebacker. I'm anxious to see Cooper, the Texas A&M kid, to see how he plays. And Hopper, who they drafted in the third. They got two linebackers they spent a second or third round pick on. I can't wait. Plus, it's going to be interesting in what Sean Payton does. Does he kick the ball to Nixon? See, I would never kick the ball to Nixon in the way this is set up here. He's too good. And I think he'll make a huge difference for them. And as you know, as a Packer fan, Ben, the Carlson kid, you lived through struggles. You want to see him take that mother may I step forward. I know you got Greg Joseph there as the backup, as a kicker, but you want to see Carlson win this job.
You do. Hey, Carlson did not miss in preseason week one. It was a bunch of short, you know, shorter kicks, though, and that is a very big-time competition going on in Green Bay. You go to the offensive line, though, Michael. I mean, it's a team that was in the top 10 as far as total games lost due to injury. And it was a big reason why Green Bay had 5 games last year. 5 times Green Bay had the ball with 2 minutes or less and a chance to win the game, and they lost. You can't obviously put that all in the offensive line. There was a lot. That was a lot during the early portion season when Jordan Love was very much a struggling young quarterback. But you know, you think about what happens. Okay, if you're down to backups on the offensive line, it's the final 2 minutes. Teams are going to bring the house. They're going to force a younger quarterback into Jordan Love to, you know, beat them over the top, making very quick decisions. That will be it's a very underrated part of what will help Jordan Love continue his ascent as a guy who finished in the top 3 in a lot of advanced metrics in the second half of the year a season ago.
Yeah, I think that, look, I think one of the things you always have to do is take a look at the last 8 minutes of every game. You know, 2 years ago, the Houston Texans were really good for 50 minutes. I mean, they had the Giants when the Giants were a playoff team. They had a chance. Now, Davis Mills was playing quarterback, but they have a chance to beat the Giants. They turned the ball over on almost every possession in the second half. So I think, to me, when you have to run the ball and you can run the ball, you're good. When you have to throw it and you can throw it, you're good. And I think last year, Green Bay at times in these close games wasn't good in that offensive line. So that's why I like the Morgan pick. I like Morgan at left tackle. I don't like Morgan at guard. I think he's more – I've watched him a lot of Arizona. I think he's more of a tackle than he is a guard, but we'll see. But he was hurt his shoulder, so I don't know how much he's going to play tonight, if he plays at all.
My perspective, as far as the O-line, the fact that David Bakhtiari, as great of a player as he once was, his injury situation, it kind of felt, Michael, like just this cloud hanging over everything. And it was really hard to feel like there was a defined role on the O-line when you kept waiting. All right, when is Bakhtiari coming back? How healthy will he be? How long can he stay in the lineup? I don't know how you feel about, you know, how that changes the dynamic, but when you have the anchor of your O-line who is so up in the air with his injury status, I feel like that really hurts your cohesion as an O-line. It was a big reason why the Packers struggled to find consistency last season in that regard. Like, to me, just moving on from Bakhtiari, as much as it hurts for as good as he was at a time in his career, Like I look at that as a net positive going forward, where you can at least sit there and say, okay, we know exactly how we're going to start things from day one here as far as defined roles go.
Yeah, I agree with that, Ben. I think like Tyron Smith for the Cowboys, they did the same thing. At some point, you just say, look, I'm tired of not counting on this guy. Now Baltimore has gone the other way with Ronnie Stanley. They can't count on Ronnie Stanley. He's played like in 33 games in the last 3 years. But they keep going back to him. They've lowered his salary. But it's very annoying as a general manager because you on the depth chart, boy, this guy looks like he's going to be – we're good. But then he never plays. Durability and reliability are so damn important. And I think that ultimately causes concern. And you're right about Bakar. But he was still, of all the things, though, he was still their best lineman.
He was, yep. And it's not like you just all of a sudden say, okay, well, we're going to be fine without him. It's just makes it a little bit more simpler on paper when you are scheming and you are putting together that line to say, okay, well, we know Bakhtiari is not part of the picture because there's no more question marks as far as the injury. That a huge underrated storyline for the Packers in 2024. Been a good show though, Michael, as far as some best bets, like Pittsburgh teaser leg up to 8.5 week one. Pair that with Minnesota, still get them plus one out there in some shops, pair them with some other favorites, some survivor thoughts as well. I really like that. We want to throw one more. Are you ready for a college football game of the year bet, Michael? Can I indulge you here? I know you are very high on Kentucky this year, and that's a team I'm looking to bet on here in the game of the year market. We talked ACC earlier in the show, and I'm looking to fade one of those teams in kind of that top echelon of the league. In Louisville, which is the end of the year game between Kentucky and Louisville, I really like where Kentucky is going to be at the end of the year. I mean, you bring in Brock Vandergriff, transfer from Georgia, who was a backup there. You get a new running back, Tripp Trayanum from Ohio State, has to replace Ray Davis, their do-it-all running back from a season ago. But, you know, the meat and potatoes, right? Like the lines for Kentucky on the interior, both offense and defense, are really solid under Mark Stoops. Tons of NFL prospects littering both sides of the ball. I expect by the time we get to late November, Michael, and you get the new quarterback, the running back, all the pieces integrated, this will be a Kentucky team that finishes the year really, really strong. And Louisville on the other side has to finish the year. Six of their final eight games are on the road. And you're talking about a new quarterback in Tyler Shuck who has never stayed healthy an entire season. I mean, he's been injured at Oregon, was never healthy at all at Texas Tech. I have a lot of doubts about the Shuck experiment coming in this year, replacing Jack Plummer in Louisville, to put it kindly. And I found a book at Caesars right now. You can get Kentucky plus one. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if by the time we get to the end of November, Kentucky's laying over a field goal at home in a rivalry that they have owned over the past half decade.
You know, but the only thing I would say is what worries me about Kentucky and why Kentucky and Missouri and some of those second-level Southeast Conference teams can't really challenge the top of the list is the depth. And I think when you bet something in the future, you're counting on the depth to be there. Now, at the end of the year, guys get hurt during the season. They'll be stronger at the end of the year. But the one thing that I would push back a little bit on would be the fact that, are you sure they're going to be the same team in November as you're picturing today? Because the battle and the rigors that they go through the season wear down on you.
That's always,
and they take
fair.
Away yeah. your depth. And that's the only – that would be the only concern I would have.
Right.
I would say, to me, you know, I like your logic, and I agree with you on the quarterbacks. I think, to me, I like Kentucky's team. I think Mark does a great job of making them tough, getting them physical. But for me, the most part is that I just worry about their overall – the wear and tear of playing the schedule that they have to play in the Southeast Conference.
That's very fair. And it's why I didn't want to go all in, say, like on a win total, you know, over 6.5 for Kentucky, which some people are betting this year. I trust Mark Stoops. I mean, the guy's gone over 500, seven of the last 8 years. They get 18 returning starters, 10 on defense. So there, you know, there's been experience of guys going through the gauntlet of an SEC season. And, you know, you talk about depth, too, at the end of the year. That's kind of why I thought this was the perfect way, you know, to back a team in a single game, Michael, without having to invest full season.
Yeah.
Because, again, Louisville, it's the sixth road game in eight, and they've always struggled
they
in this rivalry.
Too.
They could be
they
banged
could
up as well.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, they could be banged up, too. You just never know.
Well, you know, Vonosak.
You're playing the crystal ball betting. I kind of like it. Crystal ball betting. That's
I like it. That is good. Well, like TCU 2.0, Vaughn said that earlier in the show. I mean, Louisville was awesome last year. That could be another case this year where Louisville takes a step back.
Yeah, that's the one thing with this transfer portal. We'll never know year to year.
You were very right on that. Always great hanging out with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson. We wrap things up on the Lombardi Line with The Handle coming your way next.